and you have these strategies in regards to, I guess, work balance. Share with us a little bit about that.
So, for example, I spent a lot of time going, am I successful? You know, how much money do I need to make? What kind of house do I need to live in? What kind of car should I be driving? And then I realized that none of those things make you happy. But what is success? And so I really tried to define success. At first, it was like, well, when my family is happy and healthy, then I know I'm successful. But at some point, my family was not happy and it hasn't been healthy, right? So how do you, does that by definition mean I'm not successful? So one of the strategies I talk about is really defining what success in your life looks like, because if you don't know what you're aiming at, you'll hit it every time.
All of us feel that we have challenges in our lives. I know I do. Don't you feel like sometimes, gosh, am I strong enough to deal with the latest thing that has happened? I mean, you have the trauma of just being you, day-to-day life, and then you have those extraordinary things that happen in the course of the day that you didn't plan on. And then if you have others in your life, and most of us do, we sometimes inherit some of their challenges and drama, and it can be overwhelming. Trying to figure out how am I going to get through this day? Or am I strong enough to deal with all the different issues and concerns that I come across each and every day? Well, today we've got somebody with us that I really just loved reading about her. I don't know her yet, but I admire her story and I feel like her. I know her because she's such an open book. Ann Grady is an internationally recognized speaker and author and shares her humor, her humility, and her refreshing honesty about the practical strategies that any of us can use to basically triumph over adversity and to master change. Her new book is Strong Enough, Choosing Courage, Resilience, and Triumph. And she's also the author of 52 Strategies of Life, Love, and Work. And you got to find out how she came to write that. Just an amazing story in terms of how she lives her life and the unyielding optimism that she approaches each day with. And Ann Grady, welcome to What's Inside You, Mind, Body, Energy. It's wonderful to have you here today.
Thank you, Linus. I'm so happy to be part of the show.
Yes, it's just, and I'm not kidding when I say that just in reading your bio and what you have gone through and how you're willing to share all this, I laughed, I cried, I was inspired. I mean, what made you decide to share your story with everyone?
Well, so you know, my son, Evan, who's now 13, is severely mentally ill. And through raising him, part of it, I think, at the beginning was just cathartic. I didn't know what was wrong. We couldn't get a diagnosis. So when I was in front of audiences, I used to share some of his story more than anything just to get insight from people who might be able to help. But as it went on through the years and his illness continued and we started to get more clear on the diagnoses, people kept coming up to me and saying, thank you so much for sharing your story, because my son, daughter, aunt, uncle, mother, father, sister, neighbor struggles with mental illness and nobody talks about it and the stigma attached to it is unbearable. So thank you for sharing it. And it really, I had never thought about it in that way, but I found that so many people are afraid to talk about it, and simply bringing it into awareness is really a healthy way to cope. And then I share my story of having a tumor in my face a couple of years ago and having to I scratched my cornea a couple days after the surgery, so I had to get a gold weight implanted in my eye. But before I did that, they needed to do that before I started radiation. And so my husband and I went away for a weekend and I fell down the stairs and broke my foot in four places at the same time. And it's like, how can you not share that? Because you can't even make that stuff up.
I was reading that and that's when I was laughing and crying at the same time, because I think all of us have gone through that Calamity Jane phase where it seems like everything that can happen that will go wrong happens at the same time. And you really do begin to ask yourself, you know, God, how am I getting myself through this? Or you look back and you wonder, how did I get through that? And as I was reading about you, I thought, you know, we all ask ourselves, can we make it through? And then when we get to the other side of it, we look back and realize we did make it through. And maybe that means that we are strong enough. what made you decide to name the book Strong Enough? And tell us a little bit about what the book is about and the kinds of things that you cover in that book.
So Strong Enough is really a formula. It's a way to grow your courage, to build your resilience, and to overcome adversity so you can triumph in your personal and professional life and in your relationships. And what really made me want to write it is that so many people kept asking how I do it. And I said, you know, it's a formula. It's part courage, it's part resilience, and that helps you triumph. And so the book is really chock full with self-assessments to help you identify your current levels of courage and resilience and emotional intelligence. It provides strategies to overcome fear and adversity. And then it's got really practical suggestions on what you can do every day in your life to build resilience, to use adversity as a catalyst to grow. And I called it Strong Enough, you know, because when people say you're so strong, my answer was always, I'm not so strong. I'm strong enough. You know, I'm strong enough to get through it. And you even said on the call before we started that, right, you know, God wouldn't give you more than you can handle. And I said, I think God has too much confidence in me sometimes because it's just overwhelming. And so it was about, you don't have to be amazing. You just have to be strong enough. And like you said, when something bad in our life happens, we look back and we call it growth. And it really is. It's called post-traumatic growth. And we look back and we, with some perspective, and we can learn from it. And so part of building resilience is making meaning from a really cruddy experience. And so that's been, I believe, my calling from this is that, you know, I've have a voice and I'm able to talk with people all over the world and share the story so that they know they are strong enough for whatever comes their way, whether it's the little stuff we stress about every day or the catastrophic adversity that can just really tear us to the core.
You know, that's interesting because I think that many of us look back at things and say, whoa, how did I get through all of that? But there's something else we should probably ask ourselves is not just how did we get through all of that, but what did we learn? I truly do believe that many of the things that we go through in our lives, especially those things, the valleys or the deserts, those things that are traumatic, give us the tools and prepare us for other things that are going to be coming along the way and really does prepare us for what's next. So not only do we get stronger, but hopefully we learn from it and get that takeaway to be able to apply it to, you know, the next thing that we might go through. So when you look back at your right. life and the things that you've gone through, what kinds of things have you learned? What has been your takeaway? For instance, you talk about the seven different types of courage. What did you learn about courage, and what are those seven different types of courage?
Well, what, you know, it was interesting because a friend of mine, she's a flight attendant, and she travels all over the world by herself. And she'll go to Europe, and she'll go to the Middle East, and she just travels. And she's not afraid at all. But yet, she won't fall in love because she is so scared of getting hurt. Mm-hmm. And when I was talking to her, I'm like, I'd be terrified to travel to the Middle East by myself, or even, you know, anywhere, really, just to backpack around Europe by myself. That scares me, but I love being in love, and I'm blessed to have an amazing husband and great family. And so it occurred to me that two things. One, courage isn't the absence of fear, right? Mm-hmm. Courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is being afraid and working through the discomfort. Mm-hmm. It's really about trying to figure out what you're afraid of and how to work through it. And that was the first lesson. And the second is that there are different kinds of courage. You know, what comes easily for one person might be terrifying for another. So there's creative courage, right? Am I able to express myself? Am I able to go with the flow? There's physical courage. You know, I look at people who are in CrossFit or who practice extreme sports, and that's absolutely a type of courage and one that I don't have. There's moral courage. Are you willing to do the right thing even if it's not the popular thing? There's emotional courage. Can you forgive people? Can you forgive yourself? Are you able to understand your emotions and not run from them? There's intellectual courage and intuitive courage. And it's really just about understanding your triggers or blockers, as I call them, things that tend to trigger a feeling of insecurity or fear, and identifying what those are so that you can proactively start working through them.
What are some of the habits of courage, and how can we develop those habits of courage?
Well, I think, first of all, it's really understanding that courage, I see courage as an acronym. The C, I believe, stands for you have to be compassionate with yourself and other people, even when you're exhausted. It's one thing to struggle with adversity. It's another thing to give yourself a break and know that you're doing everything you can do. So it takes courage to really be kind to yourself when it would be easier just to get taken over by negativity. The O stands for overcoming fear and self-doubt, and nobody can do that completely, but one of the habits is really naming your fear, and is it a legitimate fear, or is it an emotional fear? Is it based on logic? Is it something that's real, or is it something imagined that I'm worried about that may or may not ever happen? The U is for really understanding and tapping into your strengths. I spent a lot of time beating myself up, feeling like I was a horrible mom because I would get home at the end of the day, I would speak in front of audiences, I'd train and work with organizations and coach CEOs, and I'd leave with more energy than I started with. And then I'd get home, and I have a son and a daughter, and I'd be exhausted. You know, by the time I put Evan to bed, I'd fall asleep next to him, and I thought, well, clearly that must mean I'm a horrible mom. But what I realized is that it has nothing to do with how much I love my kids. It's that in managing Evan's behavior, I have to tap into things that are not necessarily my strengths. I have to be extremely deliberate about what I say and how I say it. I have to be very detail-oriented and track, you know, diet and allergy and medication and everything else, and that's not naturally my style. So it's understanding and appreciating yourself for who you are, not for who you're not. Mm-hmm. The R stands for recognizing everything you've accomplished. You know, I joke that you have survived the worst thing that's ever happened to you, which by definition means you are resilient and you are courageous, and simply recognizing that you have made it through every single thing that's been thrown your way this far. The A is for adapting and being flexible because life happens. And I think sometimes we get stuck in our rigid way of doing things and we're not willing to be uncomfortable. And that's a huge courage habit, right? Am I willing to be uncomfortable because that's where growth happens, which is the G, growing and learning, right? So I stumbled upon this great video by Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky, and he was explaining how lobsters grow. And it was fascinating. Have you ever heard this?
No. Well, you know what? After reading what you're talking about, I Googled it to find out what that was. And yes, I have. And it's a great analogy. Please share it with the listeners. I think they would love it.
So when lobsters grow, their shell becomes constricting and tight. The shell does not grow with the lobster. And so the lobster actually has to shed its shell in order to grow a new one. So when it's time for it to upgrade it, you know, crawls under a rock or a structure to protect itself, and it takes off its shell or it sheds it. And now it's just completely vulnerable to the elements and to predators. And it has to wait. And it's fully vulnerable, it's extremely uncomfortable, and it has to wait for its new shell to grow. And it does this its entire life, like 20 or 30 times sometimes. And so it's interesting because we have to embrace our inner lobster. It's not comfortable to grow. I can't think of anyone in my life that has become a stronger person when everything was peachy and hunky-dory. Mm-hmm. Most of our growth happens because we have been through discomfort and we've embraced it, which is what the final letter of courage, E, stands for: enduring the tough times, knowing that, you know, if things aren't great, wait, because they will change. My husband and I were joking last night, I've been enduring this, waiting for things to change for 14 years now with my son, but it's ever changing. The challenges change. Some of them are better, some of them are worse, but it is what it is.
You know, it's interesting, too, because you're right. Some things just keep happening for whatever reason. And in this particular case, your son has a mental illness, so this is part of his journey, is having some days that are really pretty tough in terms of his acting out. And when we have, you know, those repeat performances of bad things happening and how to kind of get through them, you talk a little bit about gratitude and how that might help. How does practicing gratitude make us stronger through these times?
So I was always, you know, self-professed kind of, I was very skeptical of when I, you know, I would listen to speakers, I would read books on how gratitude is a really great tool. And at first I thought it was ridiculous. And then I decided, okay, well, I'm going to do an experiment because I want to see if it really works. I had read statistics that people who keep a gratitude journal are happier than those that don't, even long after the experiment was conducted. And so I thought, all right, well, let me try this. And so I really started to look for things for which I could be grateful, even if it was like, oh, I love this kind of apple and it's on sale, or, hey, I was running a little bit late, but I caught this green light, or I dropped something at the grocery store and somebody picked it up for me. Little things, like it did not have to be huge. And what I found is that we find what we look for. You know, when we're looking, I think about this. Sure that your listeners can relate, but think if you've ever had a relationship, you dated someone, mm-hmm. and you thought that they could be the one, and everything at the beginning of the relationship that they did was adorable. Like the way they talk is cute, the way they walk is cute, the way they tell stories is cute, but somewhere along the line, you figure out they're not the one. Mm. And then everything they do starts driving you crazy. Like watching them eat makes you nauseous. It's just, you start finding everything they do that drives you absolutely nuts. And some of us are still married to that person. But when you look for things for which to be grateful, you start to find them. And I was amazed. You know, I've suffered from depression most of my life. I was diagnosed at 19. And I have found that when I look for the good in life and in people, I tend to feel a whole lot better. So for me, gratitude is really, really critical. Dr. Robert Emmons is a scientist at the University of California, Davis, and he basically explains that gratitude has two parts. The first is acknowledging what is good in your life. And the second is acknowledging that the source of that goodness comes at least partially outside of yourself. There's something bigger, and I don't care whether you title it as the universe or God or spirituality, but it's understanding that there's something bigger, and that to me has been very comforting. So gratitude has been really powerful for me. The other thing that I've really learned a lot about, I actually heard on a song. So I live in Texas, and there's this great singer-songwriter. His name is Ray Wiley Hubbard. And he has a lyric in one of his songs that says, the days that my gratitude is higher than my expectations, well, I have really good days. Mm-hmm. And I realize that so many times when we are sad or disappointed or frustrated, it's because our expectations and reality are out of alignment. Mm. And you can't always choose your reality, but you can absolutely shift your expectations. So, you know, think about the last time somebody came home and you were frustrated because they didn't unload the dishwasher, or they, you know, didn't follow through on a promise. It's not so much that they didn't do that that's frustrating you. It's that your expectation was that they would.
Yes.
And so sometimes it's a matter of shifting your expectations from, you know, making sure that you're not setting yourself up for disappointment. You can't change other people.
Right.
You can only shift your behavior and your expectations. And that's been very, very powerful for me.
You know, it's interesting because you're right. We have these certain expectations about things, but we also have triggers, certain things that either we set up ourselves or that others do without recognizing it. Certain kinds of things or behaviors that happen that put us in a place that causes us to get upset, or as you say, blind spots. How can we discover what those are so we can learn how to avoid them to keep ourselves from being set up?
You're listening to the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. It's where we say, let the silent voices be heard. We invite you back to AmericaOutLoud.com to get all the latest. Download our new apps and be part of the most informed audience in broadcast. Well, I'm not a vitamin kind of guy, but I also discovered playing hero with your health doesn't work either. I found myself in the hospital, you know, working long hours, had trouble sleeping, low energy even. Well, I knew something had to change. Well, then someone sent me a product called Healthy Cell Pro and told me to take it for 30 days. I figured, what do I got to lose? 3 weeks into a one-month supply, the results blew me away. More restful sleep, a sharper focus, even more energy. That's even for Malcolm Out Loud, that is. Nobel Prize nominee inventor Dr. Vincent Giampapa. He explains it this way. It works by infusing your cells with over 60 plant-derived phytonutrients that target the building block of your body, the cell. I liked it so much, I asked the company for a special deal for you. Instead of $110 plus shipping, you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan, plus free shipping. Just go to HealthyCell.com. Use the limited time offer code OUTLOUD.
Blind spots are part of our behavior or personality that other people clearly see that we're not really aware of. Like, have you ever met somebody who's super, super bright, but they have no social skills whatsoever?
Yes.
I always joke, if you haven't, it could be you. But we don't always see ourselves the way we are perceived by others. And part of building courage and resilience and strength is understanding how you see yourself and what you say to yourself. I mean, we spend a lot of time to ourselves about ourselves, and part of it's seeking feedback from people that you love and care about and feel close to and know that they have your best interests in mind, and finding out parts that you might not be aware of about your behavior or personality. But part of it is really shifting the way you talk to yourself about yourself. Like, think of the last thing you said to yourself when you looked in the mirror or when you were driving, and then chances are the last thing you said to yourself was in some way, shape, or form negative or critical. Mm. And we don't talk to our friends the way we talk to ourselves. You know, we think about our life and we compare ourselves to people's Facebook page. You know, if you look at my Facebook page, which I hope you will, but it looks like I am just the best thing ever. I travel the world. I speak to the greatest companies. I have amazing relationships. Have an awesome family life. Everything's perfect. But yesterday in my living room, I was crying because my son got in a physical altercation with my husband over a candy bar. Mm. You know, so don't compare yourself to other people. We all have challenges. We just don't always advertise them.
That's right.
I think that's what resonated with my audiences is that I share them. You know, I don't have it all figured out. We're all doing the best we can with what we have. And it's just about giving each other the benefit of the doubt and assuming the most positive interpretation of events, right? Not assigning intent when people do things, but assuming the positive.
That's interesting. I like that when you say assigning intent, because many times we have a tendency to be very sensitive about what people are saying to us, thinking that they're coming from this particular place, and they're not at all. Many times we're projecting. We're coming from that place.
Exactly.
Right. And they didn't mean anything like that. That just happened to me the other day. A friend of mine was asking me if I was going to be watching the Academy Awards. And I said, yes. She said, well, you know, my friend's not going to be able to watch it with me. So you want to watch it with me? And I said, well, you know, the way I'm feeling right now, I don't feel like being second choice. So no, I don't want to watch it with you. And I thought, what made me think that? Why would I react that way? Well, the reality was that there was something else going on in my backstory that had to do with second choices earlier that day. It had nothing to do with her. She didn't mean it that way. And she was like, whoa, Linus, where did that come from? And I'm like, why didn't I don't know. But it was because of something that happened earlier during the day. And I realized that that was a trigger, something that happens to me and someone says something that's similar to what happened to me. And I automatically assign the feeling of the prior situation to that person.
Yeah. And, you know, Brene Brown talks about the stories that we tell ourselves. Mm. And it's true, just like in your situation with the award show, you know, we have these stories that we tell ourselves. Somebody doesn't say hi in the morning, and we craft this story in our head that, well, they're rude. They're, you know, don't even take the time to acknowledge us. And we've spent so much time trying to build this relationship with them, and they walk in and they don't even say hi, and they clearly must not care about us as a person. When in reality, you have no idea what that person just went through in the morning. Maybe they woke up and had a fight with their spouse and realized they couldn't pay a bill on time. And then they were late to work. And then they got there and they were disheveled and spilled coffee in the car. You know, you just don't know, but we project our own interpretation and our own story, and we end up making ourselves crazy and miserable in the process.
You know, you wrote this book, 52 Strategies for Life, Love, and Work. That was your earlier book. What made you decide to write that? And share with us, what was going on at the time when you decided to write that book?
So for a long time, I was a single mom raising Evan. When he was about 18 months old, his behavior started to escalate so severely, and his dad just left. And I thought, well, look, I have a master's degree in organizational communication. I work with all these great companies. Surely I should be able to influence his behavior and manage my life and my job and everything in between. And I realized that none of the stuff that I learned in school was working. And I felt like I was drowning. Like I could not even survive. It was so overwhelming. So I threw out everything that I learned in school, and I just started collecting strategies. And I would think of a strategy that would help me, and then I would write about it. You know, so I would, for example, understanding my frustration with work-life balance, right? I couldn't seem to find a way to run a business, to volunteer, to be a friend, to be a mom, to do everything I needed to do. And at some point, I just realized, you know, balance is BS. There's no such thing as balance. It's about figuring out what your real priorities are and focusing on them. So I wrote about that in a journal, and I moved on to my next strategy. And, you know, it could be something like, here's how I have to communicate with these doctors, because if I communicate the way I know how to communicate, it's not working. So I have to shift my approach when I'm communicating with them. And then I realized everybody has to shift their approach when they're communicating with someone. And so I started doing research on behavior styles and the psychology that goes into behavior change. So I started writing strategies about that. And pretty soon I had this whole collection of strategies, and I realized most of the change that is sustainable happens in small bite-sized chunks, not huge changes. Like, that's why New Year's resolutions don't work. You know, by February, we have a beer in one hand, a cheeseburger in the other. We've been to the gym. That hurt. I'm not doing that again. Yeah. And we revert right back to what we were doing. And so the slight edge is really one strategy a week over the course of a year, 52 weeks. And it's a 2 or 3 page strategy on something that I learned that not only helped me, but that I found translated and helped my clients as well. And so they're really strategies that you can apply personally and professionally to communicate better, set goals, achieve the myth of balance that we have. And so it really just was my survival guide and my toolkit. And it turned out to be a great resource for others as well.
Share with us maybe some of those strategies. Like, for instance, I know you cover things having to do with work. The majority of the people who listen to this broadcast are entrepreneurs. Some of them are actually working for someone else. And you have these strategies in regards to, I guess, work balance. Share with us a little bit about that.
So, for example, I spent a lot of time going, am I successful? You know, how much money do I need to make? What kind of house do I need to live in? What kind of car should I be driving? And then I realized that none of those things make you happy. But what is success? And so I really tried to define success. At first, it was like, well, when my family is happy and healthy, then I know I'm successful. But at some point, my family was not happy and it hasn't been healthy, right? So does that by definition mean I'm not successful? So one of the strategies I talk about is really defining what success in your life looks like, because if you don't know what you're aiming at, you'll hit it every time. And so if you're not clear on what success looks like for you, it's easy to get swept up in comparing yourself to others rather than going, you know what, for me, it is spending more time with my family. And if that means I take a job that pays a little bit less, that doesn't make me any less successful. It means I'm focused on what's most important for me. And so it's really about not trying to have perfect balance, but being very clear about your priorities, spending 80% of your time there without apologizing for it, and then making sure that your expectations are in alignment with the people in your life, whether that's your manager, your spouse, your clients. You know, for 20 years, I've been an entrepreneur working with different clients, and I found that most of them compare the success of their business to the success of others without really spending time defining what it looks like for them. Mm. And that's why Zappos and Southwest Airlines and Google have been so successful, because it wasn't about a comparison. It was about taking time to define a vision of success and working toward it.
I love that idea. And you're right. So many of us measure ourselves based upon how we think others view us or based upon other people's expectations and not our own, being true to ourselves. And there's a lot of talk. There's been a lot of talk I noticed in the millennium about authenticity, you know, being authentic mm-hmm. to yourself. Or is this the real you or whatever? How does understanding, you know, that piece of you when it comes to courage and being stronger help you with being true to who you are?
You know, authenticity means different things. Some mm-hmm. people means it. Some people think it means, well, I tell everything about myself, and other people just try to be genuine. And I think the word has been overused. For me, authenticity means I really have taken some time to get to know myself. I know what's important to me, and I let those values guide my behavior. I know what triggers me, and I try to either proactively manage those things, or I try to recover more quickly when I am triggered. And for me, authenticity means I believe my story can help people, so I share it, not because, you know, and I asked my son, can I share your story? And he said, will it help people? And I said, absolutely. He said, then share it. Please share it. You know, I just shared it in my TED Talk in front of 1,500 people. And he was like, can you put a picture of me up so they can see what I look like mm-hmm. in my TED Talk? And yeah, absolutely. For me, authenticity is going, look, my life isn't perfect. Yes, I'm a motivational speaker. Yes, I get to travel and do cool things. But I also, you know, have to manage a very real challenge every day. And so for me, building courage is about not hiding from that. It's knowing what's most important. It's sharing my message because I think it can help other people. And it's cathartic, right? It gets it out there. So it's my own weird type of therapy. And for me, that's what authenticity looks like. For somebody else, it might be very different.
Well, in your book, you talk about the fact that it's not really possible to motivate others. Mm-hmm. What were you talking about, and why do you feel that way?
Well, I work with a lot of business owners, and I work with a lot of executives and leadership teams, and the common trend is that they all want to know how to motivate their staff. How can I motivate my team? How can I motivate my board? How can I motivate my kids? How can I motivate my spouse? And I think first it's understanding that you can't light a spark in others if one is not lit in you, right? You can't expect other people to be inspired if you aren't. But it also means that you can threaten people with the stick, you can incent them with the carrot, but ultimately people are motivated internally by whatever it is that drives them. And so rather than trying to figure out how to motivate someone, I suggest that you should try to figure out what already motivates them and tap into it. So an example, I used to be the director of training and development at a large resort. And every time I would do something really well, my boss would give me a sleeve of very expensive golf balls. And by the time I worked there for a few years, I had a whole cabinet full of golf balls.
Wow.
And guess what she never asked me? You know, she never asked me if I play golf. I don't. You hit a ball with a stick into a hole you can't even see. I don't get it, but people love it. But I'm not one of those people. And
that's
so, you know, for me, traffic was a nightmare, and getting home could take an hour and a half if I waited till rush hour. So I said, you know what? I love that you want to reward me with golf balls, but if you want to save the money and just let me go 15 minutes earlier on Friday so I can get home and be home with my family, that would be even better. And she laughed at me. She was like, oh, you're so cute. Here are some more golf balls. And it's like, no, you don't get it, right? Like, don't try to motivate people by what motivates you, because we're all motivated differently. For some people, maybe it is something material or it is money. And if that's the case, then reward them with an attaboy. But for somebody else, it's just shoot your praise, right? Or being
yes.
included.
And that is so funny, because we are so tuned in. We think we're so tuned in to what our staff might want, or our family may want, or our friends may want. But once again, some of that is just really projection, maybe some things that we would really want to have. And you're wondering, well, why isn't that person happy about that? This happens between my husband and I all the time. You know, I'll do something special for him, I think. And he's like, You know, I was like, aren't you excited about that? He's not really. I was like, well, I'm excited about it. And yeah, I'm excited about it because that's what I would have wanted to do for me. So that is such an important point. And for those of you who are just tuning in, we're talking to the wonderful Anne Grady. She's an internationally recognized speaker and author who shares humor, humility, and refreshing honesty with practical strategies. And we're talking about courage and resilience and strength. She's the author of a new book, Strong Enough, Choosing Courage, Resilience, and Triumph, and she's also the author of 52 Strategies to Balance Life, 52 Strategies for Life, Love, and Work. And we're so excited to have you. I've got another question for you because I've been dying to ask you this question because I don't have an answer. So I'm hoping that you do too.
All right.
You said that people should strive for something else instead when it comes to, I guess, courage or motivating people, work-life balance. What are those insteads? What is it that we should be striving for instead?
Well, it goes back to what is your definition of success, right? So rather than striving for other people's definition, I think it's important to figure out where your priorities lie. And taking, for example, like you just said, you and your husband have you do something for him and you're like, well, I think you should be motivated by that, right? Well, there's this great book by Chapman called Five Love Languages, and it talks about how we tend to not, you know, in work, we try to motivate people by what motivates us, but in love, we try to love people by the way we want to be loved, right? And so rather than striving for somebody else's perfect marriage because you look on Facebook and see they had date night and they're super cute and happy, right? And then you look at the fight you just had with your significant other about not loading the dishwasher and you're like, what's wrong with our marriage? It's really taking time to go, what's important for us, and how do I take time to invest deliberately in growing that rather than spending my energy comparing ourselves to a different couple? Or it's at work going, you know, I really do want to be promoted. I would love to be a VP, but at the same time, they travel 3 weeks out of every month, and I want to be home to see my kid's soccer game. And so it's really just taking time to figure out what's most important to you and spending your time doing it without feeling guilty.
That's so interesting because so many of us have these goals and objectives that may not really be about who we are, but more about who it is we want to be or who we think that others might want us to be, our family members or friends, how they view us and wanting to live up to those expectations. And that can be kind of stressful. When you're not actually living the life that you really want to live, when you're busy trying to please others, you know, as Joyce Myers calls it, the need to please disease, when you've got that can cause a lot of stress. How can we manage that? What are some of your strategies for managing stress?
So stress is, one of those things that we're all dealing with pretty regularly. The American Psychological Association reported that last year, 34% of Americans said their stress levels have shot up in the past year or at an all-time high. And it's causing heart disease and depression and anxiety and diabetes and aches and pains and, you know, slower digestion or, you know, slower metabolism and poor digestion and everything you can think of. And what happens, I think, is that we've become addicted to it. And we, you know, our brain is flooded whenever we're stressed or in a threat state, whether that's because we read an email that just frustrated us or because we saw a dog running at us. Our brain releases cortisol and adrenaline and norepinephrine, and it creates this fight or flight state. And our brain, if we're living in that state long enough, consistently enough, we get addicted to it and we don't know what to do without it. So, you know, for me, what I have found to be incredibly helpful might be very different from what you find to be helpful. So for me, getting enough sleep is critical. If I don't get enough sleep, I don't cope well with the adversity I'm dealing with. For me, exercise has been so important. And for the longest time, I, you know, had people saying, well, if you would exercise and eat right and get enough sleep, and all I heard was wah, 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 blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody says that. Well, 3 years ago, I went into a pretty deep depression. We were having a really hard time with Evan. I was going through some pretty significant health challenges. And my doctor said, well, what's the one exercise you enjoy? And I said, well, I don't enjoy any exercise, but I don't hate swimming. So I started swimming. And at first, I could only swim a lap or two. But now I swim 3 or 4 days a week. I swam this morning. And it just keeps me, it regulates me. More than I would have anticipated. For me, mindfulness and meditation has been incredibly helpful in being still and not trying to, you know, always have the answer, but to just let my mind be still. We're so busy being busy that we don't recharge ourselves. Our phone battery gets to 10% and we scurry around, you know, looking for an outlet like mice looking for cheese.
I'm laughing because you're preaching to the choir on that one. I'm forever looking for an outlet, which is crazy.
Yeah, and it's crazy, but we don't have a charging station for us.
Right,
and we're all, you know, on fumes. And so you can't, you know, my mom is a flight attendant. And here's an example of courage. So my mom was a court reporter for 35 years. Mm-hmm. And I had thought she always wanted to be a flight attendant and that she just went for it one day. But and I said that in my first TED Talk, and she watched my TED Talk and said, Anne, that's not. And I said, well, what's the truth? And she said, I was terrified to fly. I was terrified to be in airports. I was scared I would get lost. And I figured, what better way than to not be afraid reports than to practically live in one.
Wow.
So she became a flight attendant at the age of 50 something, and she's now 68 and she's still doing it, you know. And so to me, that's courage. But she makes these great announcements, and my favorite is, you know, in case of a sudden loss of cabin pressure, please put your oxygen mask on and then assist your child.
Right.
And if you're traveling with more than one child, pick your favorite or the one with the most potential. And she's kind of got a warped sense of humor like I do, but it's true. You have to take care of yourself before you can take care of others. We're so busy being busy that we're not taking care of ourselves. I thought my tumor on my face was from cell phone use because I held my cell phone right near my cheek, which is where the tumor was. And my doctor said, no, it's been living for over a decade with continued stress and challenge with your son. So, you know, our body is not meant to be in a stress state constantly. And if we're not careful, it will manifest in ways that we don't want. It manifests in headaches, and it, you know, 80 to 90% of illness is stress related. And some doctors would argue 100% because disease is basically dis-ease. It's your body not at ease. And we're so flooded with stress. Some of it's unpreventable, but the way you manage it is a very individual thing. You know, there's lots of great research now on meditation and mindfulness, and I used to think that was a hipster buzzword, but you know, in the 50s, if you told people you were going for a jog, they'd ask who was chasing you. Nobody just went for a run. That was a hipster buzzword at some point too. So I've been practicing it, and I feel much better.
Oh, I'm with you on that. I really do believe in meditation and mindfulness. Of course, for me, one of the biggest challenges was just slowing myself down enough to be able to meditate or to be mindful. But I had someone on my show. I love what I do because I learn so much from all of you, all my guests and my listeners. I just sit and listen and taking notes, and it's like, wow, being back in school again. But one of my guests told me that when you are trying to be to slow yourself down and you're trying to meditate, there's two things she said. The first thing is to try to do it maybe just 3 minutes a day, three times a day, instead of trying to go for like 30 minutes the first time. Probably not going to work.
Right.
And then the other thing she said, when you're doing it for the 3 minutes and other thoughts come, instead of trying to push them out of the way or not thinking, you know, because it's like pink elephants. The more you think about not thinking about that, that's all you can do is think about what you're not supposed to think about. So instead, you just let the thought come and let it just go right on by. You know, just let it come, let it go right on by. Just let it come, let it go right on by. And after a while, as you're just kind of letting it go right on by, next thing you know, 3 minutes have gone by and you're feeling calmer, you know, and you're feeling more collected.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm a perfectionist and always have been, and I'm trying so hard to be better. But, you know, when I started meditating, I was like, I want to be the best meditator ever. I mean, if I can't be the best meditator, why does she look more calm than I do? I should be calm. And so I'd be sitting there and I'd be like, what are we having for dinner? And, oh, I forgot to get a birthday present for this party this weekend. And why is my leg itching? Is there something wrong with my leg? Do I need to go to the doctor? And so I read an article that was saying, you know, if your mind is wandering, you know, like you said, don't judge it, but it's proof that you're being mindful because you know what's happening with your thoughts, right? So you just bring yourself back to your breath, and then it's kind of like a muscle. Every time you bring yourself back to just focusing on your breathing, you're strengthening your ability to focus. And now there's so much research that demonstrates how powerful it is. It improves your attention. It regulates your health. Mm-hmm. It, you know, gives you more peace of mind, but it also has so many physical benefits. It relieves anxiety and depression. It rivals antidepressants. It improves dopamine and serotonin production in your brain. There's just so many different parts of it. And I gave up on trying to do it right. And I just found this great app that I like. And it's this really calm woman's voice with birds in the background and ocean water. And it, I just love it. And it's, you know, it's what works for me. But again, you know, everybody has to find what works for them. Don't try to go to your friend's hot yoga class if that's not something that you're into.
Yeah, once again, you have to do what you know resonates with your spirit. You have to be in tune just enough to know enough about yourself to know, okay, I like this. And then be honest with yourself. You know, you mentioned, you know, some of us are perfectionists. I'm one of those too. We have that in common, Anne. And if I'm going to do something, if I'm going to, you know, practice jogging because I'm thinking somewhere in my mind that one day I'll jog 10 miles. Well, the reality is that's not what I really want to do. That's nowhere near what's really going on in terms of my wanting to exercise, but that's where I'm going to take it. And sometimes we need to give ourselves a break and really be honest with ourselves and say, you know what, that's not what I want to do. And that's okay.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, I think that we have become fixated on being the perfect version of ourselves and knowing. For me, it was really hard when people would say, Anne, are you doing all you can do? Just do your best. And as a perfectionist, my insecurity was like, well, how do I know if it's my best? What if there's better in there and I'm just not doing it? You know, like what if I'm not doing everything I can do? What if there are other doctors I can find or other treatments I can pursue? And at some point for me, I had to just start saying, all I can do is all I can do. You know, like I can't constantly beat myself up for not being the version of myself I think I'm supposed to be. I have to be okay with where I am and just appreciate the goodness around it rather than being constantly disappointed that I'm not this perfect version of myself that I envision. And I think, yes, we compare ourselves to other people, but I think we compare ourselves to what we think we're supposed to be.
Yes.
And that is crippling.
You know, that supposed to be thing is comprised of so many things that aren't necessarily really about who we are, but about what we've been exposed to or about what the other evaluations of success is or evaluation or the definition of a good person or a beautiful looking person, mm-hmm. whatever that is. And very little of it comes, you know, back to us. So how do we bring it in? How do we hone it in to go back to the original entity, which is ourselves? How do we start making it more about us and less about everything outside of us?
Well, I think it's about doing some soul searching and figuring out what are your triggers? What really brings out that sense of fear or insecurity or self-doubt? What is it about your life that you can be grateful for? And how do you train yourself to look for more of those things? You know, here's the bottom line. We train people how to treat us and we train ourselves how to think about ourselves. Mm. And those are habits. And the way our brain works between a good habit or a bad habit, it just takes anything we repeatedly do and it turns it into a habit so it doesn't have to work as hard. And if we're not careful, we habitualize ourselves into a way of being that is not supporting our goals or our success. And it's about evaluating habits that you have that are setting you up for success and those that could be sabotaging your success, mm-hmm. and choosing one thing to work on at a time. You know, behavior changes one of three ways, rarely, slowly, or never. Mm. It is extremely hard to change our behavior, let alone think we have the power to change somebody else's. So pick one area of your life, just one, something that you've either wanted to start doing, something you've wanted to stop doing, something you want to continue doing, and identify the habit pattern that surrounds it. So like Sean Aker is a great author of The Happiness Advantage, and he says, you know, well, I used to not want to go to the gym, so I slept in my gym clothes and I left my shoes right by the bed, so I didn't have any option not to do it. That might work for him. For me, it was this habit of self talk. And so I spent a long time going, woe is me, it's not fair. You know, why do my friends have healthy kids? Why don't I have this life? And while those thoughts might have been true, they weren't serving me. And, you know, it's not realistic to go from why me to I'm the luckiest mom in the world. Like, I love getting kicked and beaten before I go to work. That just wasn't realistic. So, you know, I went from this sucks, why me, to it is what it is. Right? All I can do is all I can do, and I've got this. I've handled everything that's come my way. I can do it. For me, I pasted those sayings all over my house. I have a doormat that says this is what it is. Mm-hmm. I've got a sign in my bathroom that says you've got this on the mirror. Mm-hmm. You know, I've got on my desk, I've got, you know, all I can do is all I can do. Make it a great day. So I put notes to myself because I needed it to change the way I was thinking. And then when you master that habit, then you move on to the next one. But don't try to change everything at once, or you'll change nothing at all.
I love that wisdom. That is so true. Focusing on one thing, surrounding yourself with the thing that you're going to be focusing on, that behavior change that you want to make, and be gracious and kind to yourself, and realize that you really do have the strength in terms of the things that you want to pursue because of all the sum total of experiences that have made you you. You've already survived so many things already. And you just need to maybe have a party and celebrating the fact that you are who you are. I don't think we party enough. At least we don't party enough for the right reasons. You know,
That's right.
I was reading a book by Mae McCarthy, and she talks about seven strategies for abundance. And one of the strategies is that when you reach that breakthrough, when you get to that goal or that objective that you've been striving for, and you finally get there, there's one thing that you have to do, and you know what that thing is? She said,
you have to celebrate.
Yes, you have to celebrate it with no guilt, okay? You don't need approval from anyone to celebrate it. Celebrate the fact that you accomplished a goal or a task or whatever that thing is that you've been wanting and believing for and finally you're there. I had a breakthrough like that about 2 weeks ago. And I have to admit, for about half a day, I was literally afraid to tell anyone. Because I didn't want anybody to poo-poo, you know, my breakthrough. I wanted their reaction to be like mine, you know, which is silly. It's not about their reaction. It's about the fact that I accomplished this huge goal, and I'm excited about it. So why not go ahead and celebrate? And celebrate does not necessarily mean that you have to surround yourself with people. Maybe celebration means that you go and you do something really great for yourself. You know, that self-love.
Yeah, you get a massage or you take a walk or you see a movie, you know. But I think we're too quick to move past it. Like, I remember several years ago, I was quoted in a CNN article, and it was my first big press moment, and I was so excited and so happy, and within an hour I was worried, but what if I never get quoted in another magazine? What if I never write another article? What am I going to do? I better start now. And so I think it's about like celebrating it, but really keeping yourself in that present moment. And when you start thinking about, well, what's the next thing I have to celebrate, to just take time and be really proud and happy and content with where you are.
And that is so important. And Anne, thank you so much for being on our show today. It's been wonderful to have you. And for those who want to find out more about you, purchase your book, Strong Enough, and also maybe get a chance to hear one of your talks, what's the best way to find out that information?
GetStrongEnough.com. So if you are interested in articles, blogs, information, the book, anything else, if you go to getstrongenough.com. www.thebusinessmamas.com. You will find it all.
Fantastic. I love all the things that you shared. And you guys have got to go to the website, getstrongenough.com. There's a lot of great information there. You get a chance to see Anne in all her glory as she's speaking. Her TEDx talk is there. Great blog. And, of course, you can purchase the book through that website. Wonderful information to not just help you to be strong enough, but to also to enjoy your life and to be grateful. Right. That you have the life you have. Thanks so much, Anne, for being with us on What's Inside You. It's been wonderful to have you.
Thank you, Linus. It's been a pleasure.
And it's been wonderful to have all of you. Thank you, listeners. By the way, I want to tell you, I'm getting your emails, and I'm glad that you are enjoying the show. I'm so excited. Last I checked, which was about a couple weeks ago or so, and I don't know when you're going to be listening to this, but we're in the last day of February 2017, and the show is up to over almost 30,000 downloads a show, so someone is listening, and I'm so glad. Please share our broadcast with a friend. We have lots of other great guests on the show that have shared with us their wisdoms and their life stories. Take a look at those shows. And to find out more about me, you can go to my website, praiseworks.biz, all kinds of information on how to be well in your mind, body, and spirit. This is Linus, and I am a holistic wellness and living expert. It's been great to have you, and we'll see you again next time.